Feeling-driven.
Willpower. Hello and welcome to the second episode of Willpower Podcast. My name is Ilaria Biancacci, journalist and founder of Willpower, and I'm here today with Fatou Bintou Salah, a first-class magistrate in the Gambia and program consultant for UN Women Nigeria, and Marta Chatim, legal research associate for the National Constitutional Amendment Committee in Juba, South Sudan. Together, we will discuss about the situation of women's rights in Africa.
Hello, Fatou, and welcome to our podcast. It's a pleasure for me to have you here again to make sure you can tell your story and share it with our followers. Just briefly, if you can introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about your journey and about your interest in activism and women's rights.
Thank you so much, Ilaria. It's a pleasure to be back here, you know, talking and conceptualizing and just sharing stories. Like you rightly said, my name is Fatou Bintou Salah. I'm from the Gambia. I'm a lawyer by profession. I'm currently doing a master's in human rights and democratization in Africa. I have a BL. I've been called to the Gambian bar, so technically, I can practice law in Gambia and, you know, represent women, represent cases. Before doing the master's, I worked as a deputy women's affairs coordinator at the Truth and Reconciliation Reparations Commission in the Gambia for roughly around 6 months before I came for the master's. And before that, I worked with UN Women in Nigeria, first as an intern, then subsequently as a consultant under the Women, Peace and Security Unit. But I also did other activities like, you know, organizing 16 days of activism, International Women's Days, celebration, the Beijing Plus 25, and a plethora of other activities and events. And before that, I also worked with government. I worked with the judiciary as a first-class magistrate. I've worked with civil society. Yeah, in a nutshell, that's basically me. And to answer your question on, you know, my interest in activism, particularly with women and girls' rights, I come from Gambia, which is a developing country, and it has a lot of gaps between, you know, men and women in terms of employment, in terms of education, even in terms of the home and how boys and girls are raised. So all of these things just like, you know, fueled my activism. And like I said in the magazine, right from, you know, when I was growing up, I always wanted to do something that could change lives, that could impact someone else outside of myself. Because I realized early on that there's more to life than just, you know, doing things for yourself. So that, you know, giving back led me to activism, led me to law. And like I had highlighted, I saw law as an instrument, as a tool to change lives, you know, to make lives better. So basically, that is what drove me to activism.
In your process to give back to the community, you travel quite a lot around Africa as well. You mentioned you've been to Nigeria. I know as well you briefly went to, you had an experience in Kenya as well. And right now you're based in South Africa. So yes. As a woman, what are the differences that you've noticed in these three countries when it comes to women's rights? And what have you learned that you can bring back to your community and to Gambia to make sure you can empower girls and women in the right way?
Interestingly, most of the issues that, you know, plague women and girls are like cross-cutting across the continent. Across the developing world, I can say, from Asia, you know, from China to Africa. The differences, you know, lie in culture and those subtle differences. But there's a golden thread that goes, you know, throughout, you know, inequality. Where the difference lies is perhaps, for example, in Gambia, we have things like female genital mutilation. We have things like, you know, early marriage, girls dropping out of school. Domestic violence, but domestic violence is actually also very cross-cutting. In Nigeria also, you have certain parts where female genital mutilation is practiced, early marriage is practiced, but maybe in a different format or in a different way, you know. In South Africa, there are certain tribes, but it's very minor. I haven't really done much research on it, but I do understand that there are certain tribes that do female genital mutilation, but it is not as widespread as in Gambia or in Nigeria or in Kenya. In Kenya too, if I'm going to compare Kenya and Gambia, I would say Gambia has a higher threshold than Kenya. It has a higher, you know, practice of female genital mutilation, perhaps early marriage than Kenya. But Nigeria also, I could say there was a lot of prevalence of early marriage, especially in the northern side where, you know, the Boko Haram is really hit. Basically.
And one story you mentioned to me in our interview for the magazine is you talk about the farmer elders conflict in Nigeria, yes, which is a less known conflict compared to the one of Boko Haram, but it does have an influence on women and use women as a tools in different way. Can you explain us a little bit more?
Yeah, I had mentioned, yeah, that definitely it's not as widely spoken about, especially externally outside of Nigeria, as the Boko Haram, because maybe there's not much coverage, maybe there's not much research, but it's equally as bad as Boko Haram. And it also has a really, really high impact on women. For example, you know, when their husbands and their brothers, you know, their fathers go away to fight or they die, women become household head. But at the same time, you're a household head, but the culture and the socioeconomic setup of the society you live in doesn't give you the whole plethora of, you know, the rights and liberties. So it also confines women to a particular uncomfortability. And in terms of the conflict, there's reports of sexual violence, there's reports of, you know, women dying. But like I had said, in the Boko Haram conflict, you have women being used as human shield, which is not very popular with the farmer herders conflict because of the mode of fighting. With the Boko Haram, they fight using bombs, you know, human bombs and, you know, guns and all of that. But with the farmer herder conflict, it's usually over land, and some of the equipment or some of the tools, the weapons they use are not as sophisticated. So women are not particularly used as human shields, but on some occasions they are used as intel. You know, a woman from an opposing side can go to the market, you know, where all the women from all the sides trade, chat, they would have conversations, and they can draw in information which they now take to their male counterparts or their male family members, which kind of fuels the conflict. So they do play roles, but in very subtle ways. They also play roles in conflict mediation, but it's not as amplified as it should be.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you are about to complete your master, and we say you finish your dissertation, and it's time for you to celebrate this new achievement. And yeah, you're also planning to go back to the Gambia, so to finally go back to your own country and start putting in place something to actually make a change. So what would be the next step for you now?
The next step, it's not as clear as I would want it to be, but like you are very right. One of my plans is to go back, or even if I don't go back, my work has to center Gambia. So you can definitely make an impact even outside of Gambia, like, you know, writing research, investigating, making recommendations. You can do a plethora of things even outside of Gambia. But my main aim is definitely centering Gambia, especially, you know, at this critical stage. I had mentioned in the magazine, in the interview, that, you know, Gambia is transitioning from authoritarian rule under Jame to democracy. And there are lots of setups, there are lots of settings, you know, from the commission to the Truth Commission to the security sector reform to institutional changes that all require, you know, our opinions, that require work to be done, especially from, you know, young people like me who still have the zeal and the enthusiasm. So definitely Gambia is going to be centered in my work. I would definitely have plans of going back. But even if I don't go back, maybe there's a better way of doing it. Maybe there's an opportunity somewhere else where I can even make more impact, you know. It will still have to center Gambia, because that's where home is. That's where I would like to really make a change.
And if there was an advice you would give to younger, to girls and younger women in the Gambia or even everywhere in the world, for them to empower them, what would be?
I think I have a lot to say, but to make it very short, I'd say let nothing stop you, especially the fact that you're a woman, you know. If you have a dream of achieving whatever it is, to be an engineer, to be a doctor, to be a carpenter, do it. To be a chef, even, to be a cook, to be an artist, do it and give it your, you know, ultimate best. Do it as if tomorrow would be the last day you would do it, you know. And don't pay attention to naysayers. Don't pay attention to people saying, you're a woman, you can't do this, you can't say this, you can't behave like this, you know. And just, you know, surmount the challenges. There would be challenges, a lot of them, you know, but just keep your head up, you know, and know that people have been there and they made it and you're going to make it. And you're a queen, you know.
We are all queen, right?
We are all queen.
We are all queen. Well, yeah. Thank you, Fatu, for this very interesting conversation. You can discover more about Fatu's story on our magazine, and you will find it at the website www.wempower.co. Fatu, she is a member now of Wempower Network, so she's available. You are with us now. She's available. Absolutely. For any recommendation, advice that you might want to ask her, and I'm sure we're going to host her one more time on our platform through podcast or video, just to share her experience, her knowledge.
Thank you, Fatu, for the very interesting testimony. We pass the line to Marta, Legal Research Associate for the National Constitutional Amendment Committee in Juba, South Sudan.
My name is Martha Chatim. I'm currently working as a Legal Research Associate for the National Constitutional Committee that is based in Juba, South Sudan. It is a body that was formed after a peace agreement on the resolution of the conflict of South Sudan was signed in 2018. And the main function of this body is to review the laws, the already existing laws, to conform them to the agreement and some of the reforms that might be necessary. As far as the agreement is concerned and also best practices around the world. So my role really has been majorly to research on some of the latest developments when it comes to some of these legal frameworks, and suggest them to the committee and we have them discussed, which they can either adopt or further discuss, you know, for any enhancement if need be, or sometimes where it's not necessarily relevant, then it's put aside. So basically, yeah, that's what I do.
And I know that you are. You also have experience with governance, peace and security, and youth and women's rights, especially in the context of conflict. Can you tell me a little bit more about your experience on this side?
So my experience started in 2018, when actually 2017, when I was doing a consultation with the UN Women. At that time, I was helping the women delegates who were sitting in the peace negotiations So I would mostly just research on some of the aspects of the agreement that I feel needed to be enhanced for the favor of the women, for example, and what the women delegates must do to push for such provisions. For example, we wanted to have the affirmative action provision, which says women, I mean, there is a 25% slot for women in the governance sector. And so we wanted to increase the 25% by 10%. And after a long struggle, the parties finally agreed on increasing it to 35%. So I think that is one of the biggest milestones that was achieved by women, by the women during the peace process. But even more important than that, we tried to engender the peace agreement to make it more women relative, for example. And also that extends from the peace agreement to now the review of the laws that we're doing. And it has, we were able to enshrine the 35% provision for the women in the constitution. And now we're also engendering all the other laws where there is a criteria, for example, of employment somewhere in the public service. We ensure that the 35% is there just to guarantee women's participation, because it hasn't been easy, and even with the provision of the 35%, it's still taking us time to convince the leaders to have women participate in their spaces.
Okay. What is the current situation of women rights in South Sudan in terms of legal framework and acts and situation of women and girls growing up in South Sudan?
Well, the situation is still, I can say it's still very raw, because we have been in war for a very long time, and because of that, a lot of things have been out of place. If I'm to talk about the situation of women, for example, in the rural areas, of course, they still experience a lot of issues. For example, domestic violence, discrimination of the girl child, you know, and early marriages, girls being stopped from accessing education while the boy child is able to go. And it's things like that are still very rampant. And I think it's also because of the fact that we just got our independence and we do not actually have institutions in place, and resources are also very minimal. So it's about competition between men and women for some of the services, which in turn I think results into a negative impact on the women. In terms of the legal framework, nationally we have made some strides, I can say. We have the 35% provision for women inclusion in governance already guaranteed by the constitution. And we also have some funds that are specifically put aside for women's development and hopefully for the empowerment of women economically. And we have those provisions that, the aim of the provisions is just to help put the women of South Sudan on a better platform to enable them to have equal access, you know, to all the all the opportunities in the country. But in terms of international protocols and instruments, we have been very behind. A few years ago, a few organizations were trying to get the government to adopt some of the regional and international instruments. Yeah, for example, like the Maputo Declaration.
Yeah.
The government had even discussed it, but it hasn't been ratified. So in terms of ratification of these instruments, there hasn't been any international instrument that we could actually use to support our stance as feminists and women rights activists. We can only depend on our government to and their goodwill to ensure that some of these rights are implemented as they should. But I think we still have the advantage of adopting and quoting, for example, the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, which guarantees equal access for both men and women to every opportunity. And also we have regional obligations in terms of provisions also by AU, the African Union. Mm-hmm. They also mm-hmm. have something similar to the UN SDGs that also ensures that women have equal opportunities, equal access to opportunities. And I think those are some of the things that we try to work around to ensure that we hold our governments accountable to towards ensuring that women are given equal opportunities in the country.
Okay. On a more personal note, why did you decide to pursue a career to protect and enforce women's rights and girls' rights? Is it related with your with you growing up in South Sudan or any inspiration, personal experience?
Well, I think it's something that came to me naturally, and I thought it's something that every person, it's the responsibility of every person, not only every woman, you know, to ensure that both men and women have equal access to opportunities. And drawing from my experience, I think one of the reasons I first made it my goal to become passionate about women's rights, particularly was in the area of opportunities for the girl child to attain education. Myself, I was lucky to have been born in a family where my parents believed in inequality, you know, of their children, both the male and the female child. So, in fact, they were very encouraging that we actually attain a good level of education. But my mother, on the other hand, was not very lucky. When she was growing up, her parents decided to prioritize, and I think that is still the same problem that we're experiencing because of very little resources. The parents have to prioritize on what child they get to send to school. And being the female, she did not stand a chance, you know. And although she later on attained adult education, it was still not enough. It's still not the same. And that is what we are experiencing up to today. And the young girls who are still being sidelined by their parents because we do not have enough resources to cater for everybody. So as for me personally, I think this is something that maybe if we work on might improve the situation. and also increasing the participation of women in other areas would definitely improve their situation both economically and maybe that would reflect also on them attaining equal access to education.
Okay. If yes. There was a message you would like to share with women and girls around the world, what would be, what advice would you give them?
I would say continue the fight. And this is to all women and girls. It is our responsibility. We should not get tired. The fight has been on for a very long time. And it will not stop with us, and we might not even be able to end it. It's going to be a long fight, and so we need to be strong, we need to be courageous, and we need to use every opportunity we have to ensure that we have our voices represented, and we have the power to make decisions that will have positive impact on women all over the world.
Thank you, Fatou and Marta, for sharing your experience and opinions with us today. You can discover more inspiring and powerful stories at www.wempower.co. You can also buy a membership to support our journalism and follow us on social media at Wempower UK. Don't forget that together we empower women. My name is Ilaria for Wempower Podcast. Until next time.